This is the European edition of Breaking Banks, the world's number one fintech podcast and radio show. We bring you the European unicorns, startups, founders, regulators, and leaders innovating the rapidly evolving fintech scene today. A truly localized podcast with both English and local language content with some of the world's most well-known hosts and influencers in the fintech sector globally. Join us every week as we explore what makes the European Union a phenomenal proving ground for many of the fastest growing fintech plays in the world today. Okay, let's roll.
Hey guys, welcome to Breaking Banks Europe. As usual, my name is Matteo Rizzi. I'm the executive producer of the show. And today my co-host is Francesca Liverti from Fintech Stage. Ciao Francesca.
Ciao guys. Hello everybody.
So you, as you know, you have different formats for the show, and today's format is Where Does the Money Go? With a specific focus on corporate venture capital, and you will see from our two guests today that the conversation is really about how these specific vehicles are tackling their strategies to help startups as well as the company they are built within. And our first guest today is my friend Ruth Foxy Blather. Ruth, welcome to Breaking Banks.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So Ruth, of course, is a tradition. Like, tell us a little bit about yourself. You and I goes back a few years. We don't say how many, but, and discovered, if I remember well, like the first time we met, that we technically live only like 50 kilometers apart, somewhere lost in a French mountains. So that's only one of the things we have in common. But what's your story?
Yeah, so thank you. My name is Ruth Fox Blather. I am an investor and a partner at Anthemis. Anthemis is a leading global fintech investor with over 100 portfolio companies. At Anthemis, I focus primarily on insurtech and risk management. My story is that I have been at Anthemis for 3 years. Prior to that, I was leading fintech investing at Allianz in Germany. And before that, my entire career I've spent really helping large organizations work with emerging technology. So I began my career in New York at a digital agency, you know, back in the early days of the internet when emerging technology was like having a website and a CMS and an intranet. And I continued my journey really looking after digital and social strategies for large brands and eventually really discovering the world of startups as the kind of next wave of emerging tech. And when I joined Allianz, it was really with the view to helping Allianz take advantage of the emerging technology ecosystem by working with, you know, the emerging world of fintech and insurtech startups.
And of course, in Anthemis as well, you're specifically working, or certainly not only working on this, but specifically with the venture arm of a big insurance group, right? And I'm letting you tell the name if you can, if you cannot, it doesn't really matter. But that's also part of your current experience, right?
It absolutely is. And I'm super proud of our partners and our strategic LPs. So I currently work on a vehicle which is backed by a single LP, which is the Belloise Group in Switzerland. And I work across our insurtech portfolio and our insurance practice, also on other projects with other strategic LPs. So I have a pretty broad range of experience, you know, helping our LPs and helping large organizations, banks and insurance companies bring venturing to life.
So in your experience, what is the main difference between because you, of course, you are pretty close to both worlds at Anthemis itself, but also in your previous experiences, what is the main difference if you had to explain to our broad public between a corporate venture capital and a venture capital?
Yeah, I think that's a very nuanced question. And I think the reason there isn't a simple answer is because there are a lot of different flavors of corporate venture capital. And there are a large, you know, fairly large number of institutional investment firms like Anthemis who count strategic LPs amongst, you know, some of their most important shareholders. So I think I would start by saying, I think it makes a lot of sense for large corporations, and let's say in financial services, you know, to want to work with startups. And that motivation for me boils down to a couple of things. You know, you want to get insights into emerging tech to improve basically all parts of the value chain. So, you know, on one hand, there's cost reduction and there's some really substantial cost reduction opportunities with emerging technology as it's evolving, and then increasing revenue, maybe finding totally new business lines, maybe building an M&A pipeline. But that's a super important, you know, the sort of getting involved with emerging technology is very, very important to these companies. In addition, they really need to build a new talent network and also create kind of friction and effectuate culture change. And I think that these are sort of, you know, why you might work on a venture capital practice or proposition within a large organization. For me, the biggest difference doing that externally and sort of helping our strategic LPs to be the chief beneficiaries of both the portfolio and the pipeline that we're building is really around kind of the skills that you need. So our strategic LPs really benefit from having, you know, the technical expertise of Anthemis on, you know, all of the technical parts of venture capital. So sourcing and building a qualified pipeline, sort of credibly engaging with the ecosystem, deeply evaluating the companies, both in the context of the history of emerging technology and startups that we've looked at, you know, for the past decade, and, you know, a lot of the sort of research and insights that we're developing continuously in-house to be at the cutting edge. In the due diligence process, being able to source experts both from industry, but also, you know, from the technology world globally. You know, the ability to transact, so to do the transaction in a way which is optimal for the fund that we're running. And then sort of post-transaction, the ability to both engage with the portfolio in a way which is constructive and, you know, to achieve an optimal exit. And I think, you know, there are a bunch of different ways that you can do that on the corporate side. One of them is to build those skills in-house. And what I've seen is that the companies that do that very successfully tend to have very ring-fenced corporate venture capital units where those skills sit and live, but they don't necessarily, you know, permeate the entire organization. The companies that we're working with, rather than spending a lot of time building those skills in-house, really tend to focus their time and energy on driving value out of the portfolio that we build. Contrasting that to my experience, you know, working in a CVC practice, it's very hard to wear those two hats. It's extremely difficult to be a credible venture investor and a person who is, you know, rigorously driving value from experience with the emerging technology ecosystem and the startups in a portfolio.
Ruth, double dipping on this, I would like to ask you more about this relationship between the startups and the corporate side, thinking also about your experience as a facilitator between the two. So as a startup founder, how would you pick the right corporate venture fund to allow them to invest in your company in order to keep your independency, keep your agility, and so on?
I mean, it is really difficult. I think one of the things that's very tough about large organizations is that they are subject to quite frequent change. And so if you look at the average sort of venture lifespan or the lifespan of a venture fund of 7 to 10 years, there are very few organizations that retain a high level of stability over that period of time. And so I think what makes it really difficult as a startup founder to assess a potential partner is really understanding if there is longevity in this corporate venture capital practice, particularly if, you know, the investors kind of don't own the GP or the investments are done off balance sheet. That said, there are some incredibly supportive and talented venture investors in the CVC community, some of whom we work with, some of whom also invest in Anthemis. So they have their own CVC practices and their LPs in our fund. And so I think every time a startup takes money from an investor, they have to do, you know, a bit of due diligence to understand the way that investor works and the way that fund works. One thing that I frequently tell the companies that I work with is, you know, there sometimes it's positive to allow, you know, if the CVC is saying, we're going to bring you a lot of value, we're going to do a ton of business together, you know, perhaps maybe have a few of those proof points in place prior to taking the investment, then taking the investment and then expecting the commercial collaboration to come alive. Because, you know, it's very difficult to orchestrate that, even with the best of intentions.
Ruth, talking a little bit more about your answer to the previous question, right? So Antemis today is, Francesca defined the facilitator, I actually like it. So it's basically facilitating the management of the capital so that it concentrates the DC experience, the startup experience, the entrepreneurship experience, and allow like the corporate in this case to focus more on, you know, the problem they're trying to solve, you know, what their strategy of the investment is and so forth. So it's a good marriage. The challenge though could be, and you know, I experienced that, I'm curious about what your experience is, that on the other side, the fact that you are not the company, right? So you're intermediary. The challenge might be that getting the business of the corporate really engaged beyond, you know, the sort of venture arm peers that you have might be a challenge, right? Because you're kind of an external body, you know, if you're talking about, you know, managed capital, and not sort of someone that knows super well already the internal mechanism, the dynamics of the hierarchy, you know, the politics, which, you know, large corporates are full of. How do you feel? I mean, what's your experience on that challenge?
I think it's a matter of expectation setting. So the work that I'm doing, you know, with strategic LPs is very much about future-proofing the industry. It's not about necessarily building a portfolio of companies that they can work with immediately. And I think that that's a pretty significant and important thing to understand. So, you know, going back to the first question, why should large organizations work with startups? It might not be to solve today's problems. You know, there's sort of, we think about innovation horizons. And, you know, if you kind of think like horizon one is probably not going to represent a large proportion of the portfolio. So, you know, the organization will have the opportunity to perhaps work with the companies in the portfolio in the coming years as the organization matures and as, you know, the market matures. You know, we're looking at building a portfolio that looks at the future. And I think it's important for everyone to be on the same page about that, to recognize that venture capital and corporate venture capital is an incredibly important tool in the corporate innovation toolbox, but it's not the only one. And so once you set those expectations, then you can start to think about, okay, well, how do I derive immediate value from my proximity to these companies and ensure that I am the first beneficiary of potential collaborations with industry? You know, perhaps that's really about building the skill set inside of my organization to be prepared to do that. Perhaps that's, you know, more kind of soft orchestration of events or moments where, you know, there's some collaboration or exchange. But I think it's really about thinking about the value. If you represent the value to the startups, like, oh, I'm going to get you a really great partnership with X, and then you don't do it, I think you lose credibility very quickly. And likewise, if you tell your strategic LPs, you're going to get to work with everybody day one, you know, that isn't realistic. There's just a mismatch in terms of maturity and skills, probably. So I think it's really helping both sides to understand, you know, where the potential value resides. Additionally, last thing I would say about this, so Anthemis's network is far larger than our individual LPs. So even if, you know, our perhaps the partner in a specific fund isn't the right fit for a specific collaboration or a specific need immediately, you know, we feel very confident that we can satisfy our portfolio company's needs when it comes to knowing the right people in financial services to partner and collaborate with.
Thanks, Ruth. And I think we gave quite a complete picture of how a corporate venture fund is working, which are the elements that are more important. But of course, I mean, I really have to ask you something about the situation we are actually living. So do you, and I mean, this COVID situation and probably the risk that the appetite for investment will a bit change or is already changing. So how much your focus or the focus of the companies you are working for have shifted from deal flow and new opportunities to more supporting companies already in your portfolio and injecting capital in those ones?
Yeah, I would say that like probably every investor, you know, the first thing that we did as a house when it became clear that the pandemic was both a health crisis and also, you know, rapidly becoming an economic crisis, was really to do an evaluation of the portfolio and to assess, you know, where we needed to intervene and where you know, there could be difficulties. And so that's, I think, quite normal. In terms of our appetite and sort of openness for business, I've signed two deals, actually three since the beginning of the COVID crisis. So we are open for business. We are continuing to invest. We're seeing that there are a lot of interesting opportunities. You know, we're looking slightly differently at opportunities, obviously for things that are sort of countercyclical and non-discretionary in nature. And, you know, there's quite a lot of risk right now, and I work in risk management. So, you know, it's still a very vibrant area. On the strategic LP side or the corporate side, I think we're really seeing a quite bifurcated response. We're seeing people for whom this is really a catalyst for change, where they're really recognizing that their organizations were not fit for purpose in a fully digital world. And, you know, although we all anticipate going back to some degree of normal, it's very clear that digitalization wasn't just all talk. And so, you know, I think now what we're seeing is, you know, many organizations are saying, wow, this stuff is all taking a priority. And, you know, there are some organizations who are fearful and sort of anxious and recognizing that there are, you know, potential impacts on their balance sheets. And that's a kind of normal response as well.
Ruth, thank you so much. I was actually, when I was listening to you in this last answer, I said that, you know, you and I have a long due, like a catch up, because it's been a while that we haven't, you know, that we haven't spoke. And the good news about this is that I actually feel that we have almost done a professional catch up of the past few months we have not been talking. So for the rest, I'll actually WhatsApp you soon, and we can have another chat. But it's actually really cool to have your insights on this topic. Thank you so much, Ruth.
Thank you for inviting me.
So guys, stay with us. We're going to go into a short break and stay with us for our next guest. And it's a wrap.
FinTech Stage builds innovation ecosystems. We engage incumbents, investors, entrepreneurs, technology partners, and regulators to build trusted and connected FinTech tribes around the world. We firmly believe that innovation in financial services will improve people's lives. Through our immersive programs, we connect global industry experts with local financial services communities to explore, challenge, and solve important issues related to fintech, regtech, insurtech, artificial intelligence, identity, and financial inclusion. The good news is that we have done it before. InnoTribe was the first and largest fintech movement worldwide, and our founders were amongst its orchestrators. We build programs with a wise combination of formats, partnerships, and content. It is experience-based, tailor-made, and proven to deliver results. Visit us at fintechstage.com or feel free to send an email to operations@fintechstage.com for more information.
Hey guys, welcome back to Breaking Banks Europe. Today's show, Where Does the Money Go? We talk about corporate venture capital, and after our first guest, Ruth Fox-Blatter, we're here with Didier Dalmont. Didier, welcome to Breaking Banks.
Hello, thank you for having me.
So for you, the same sort of question, introduce yourself to our audience. Didier is the managing partner of Société Générale Ventures. So I am pretty sure that you're going to give a more appropriate name to it, but it says pretty clearly what this business does. Please, by all means, share your story with us a little bit.
Okay, happy to. So I've been actually heading Société Générale Ventures for a bit more than a year and a half, so it's still early. And it, to be honest, a new job for me. My background is much more in finance. I've been working for Société Générale finance teams for almost 15 years. And prior to that, some time in consulting, and also started my career as a trader quite some time ago. So at Société Générale and with SG Ventures, so we are the corporate venture capital team of Société Générale. So we cover the whole Société Générale group worldwide, all businesses. And really our focus is to help all the business lines and the support functions also at Société Générale find the right partners within the startup world, partners with which they can develop strategic relations, long time relationship, in order to build either new businesses or to optimize processes, build new products. It can be a lot of different things, but always with this idea that 1 + 1 must equal at least 2, 3 or even more, by combining the strength of a big corporate that has been around for more than 150 years with the agility and the strength of all those new startups.
So Didier, about this, I would like to know more about your investment approach, let's say, at Société Générale. So what's exactly the balance? Actually, you already answer a bit, but what's the balance between the strategic investment and a pure speculative investment you are doing? So, I mean, any passive investment, if we can call it like that, does make any sense in your opinion?
So as I say, our target, our main KPI is definitely the strategic relationship and helping the businesses to build that. So we, of course, the value always matter, but we are not driven, and our investment thesis is absolutely not to invest and then exit and earn more money by exiting than when we invested initially. We are really there to establish long-term, and we can be an evergreen investor. So in order to do that, really, it all starts with what our businesses need in terms of partners. So it's really starting point is the relation we, as an internal team within Société Générale, we managed to build with all our 16 business lines, in order to understand where either to, you know, get a better time to market or to address new client segments, they want a partner and not build by themselves those new offers.
Didier, and I call a little bit the privilege of some inside information, but in absolutely positive way, on the contrary, because you and I have been collaborating for a while already. It would be great if you could explain a little bit better what are the different sort of line of works that are reporting to you, because I think, you know, unlike our previous intervention, you know, with Ruth, where, you know, the Antemis was in the middle, you know, between, if you want to, the startup and the corporate, you know, Société Générale actually is is doing everything inside, right? So from scratch. And I know, for example, it would be great if you could talk a little bit more about, like, you know, your internal startup initiative. And I know that, you know, a couple of people in your team are working like more on a venture studio approach. So how do you, on one side, build all these links, you know, with the rest of the organization? And now, and how as well you sort of scan or build or search, you know, for the next investment to make?
Yeah, sure. So as I said, we start with a need from a business. And so the first job every day, we are discussing with our businesses to get insights into what are their pains, what are their the things they want to change, the things they want to do. And then there are a number of levers that we can use. So when we're talking investment, We can invest, of course, taking minority stakes in external startups, but we can also, and it happened a few times last year, we can also acquire majority stakes if we believe together with the startup that the best way to collaborate. We also fund startups that are actually built within Société Générale. So we had a big entrepreneurship program in 2018, 2019. And out of that program, we actually created 8 subsidiaries that we have capitalized as new ventures. One of them is actually almost created. It's not yet done. And it will be from the very beginning an investment that we will share with other financial institutions. So we really try to use all the tools where investment is needed in order to build the right solution. There again can be minority, can be a consortia also. We have invested together with other financial institutions in order to create the subsidiaries of all of us that address new markets where you need, you know, the sheer size of a number of market participants in order to have that business be sustainable. So we're looking at all those possibilities. And of course, because we are hosted in the innovation department, the SG Group innovation department, of course, there are also other teams that address the, I would say, simple partnerships, commercial partnerships that do not have the size or the strategic nature that would trigger investment.
Thank you, Didier. Actually, it is true indeed that when you like the sole maître of your own destiny, you have several possibilities, right? And when I was thinking, you know, Trésor is a majority stake acquisition or probably even a full acquisition, but you know, I want you to give these 3 examples. So the Trésor, the Moonshot Internet, which is an inside, super successful, actually, like insurtech company that was built. And the third one, apologies if I don't remember the name, but it's that partnership with the rental car business that the name escapes me. But it's another
Rezocar,
exactly, is another great example of partnership. And maybe just spend 1 or 2 sentences on each one of them, because I would like our auditors to understand that one of the advantages of being a corporate venture capital is the flexibility and the broad range of interactions with the startups that you have, which goes beyond, you know, a minority stake on a given startup.
Yeah, sure. So maybe let's start with Trésor. You mentioned it. So Trésor is a startup that Société Générale acquired at the beginning of last year, beginning of 2019, after, you know, a few months of discussions with, of course, the founders and the investors. Why did we decide all together, Trésor founders and ourselves, that it was better to acquire the full capital is really because we were seeing so many opportunities of collaboration. With, you know, I said we have 16 business lines. We at least see 4 or 5 of our business lines that, you know, want to collaborate and have currently active collaboration projects with Trésor. So from the start, really, we all felt that it would be the best thing for all of us, that it would really give us the capacity to leverage on all those synergies. Which, by the way, it doesn't mean that we will remain the sole investor in Trésor necessarily. It could be that, you know, in the coming years where Trésor will have grown and we will have leveraged Société Générale Group assets to help Trésor grow, maybe there could be a next stage where we could have other investors joining and helping build the second phase. But that was for Trésor. You mentioned Moonshot. Moonshot Internet, it's an internal project at the start. So Société Générale people from the insurance business that really started their project to build this company. It was funded by the insurance business unit. And, you know, it went well. The project was successful. And so at one point, you know, everyone figured that it was needed to create it as a separate entity, a legal entity, subsidiary, in order to give it more flexibility, in order also to give it, you know, the ability to discuss on an equal foot with people, their either partners or competitors. So it's, you know, even though it was built from the inside, it really looks like any insurtech that you would find in the market. Rezocar, as Ruth said, really, you know, it all started with a commercial partnership. So discussions in order to have our subsidiary CGI use their financing API and plug it into a RizoCar platform. So it started like a usual, I would say, commercial partnership. And there again, you know, with the discussions that went through between the founders of RizoCar and the managers of a CGI, they really looked at all the potential that, you know, they wanted to build on. And because RizoCar at that time needed money, it was pretty natural that CGI would take a stake, but with the same logic that would, you know, remain a strategic partner, but no acquisition was needed at that time. On the contrary, we really wanted RizoCar to be an external startup, not something within the group, in order for it to develop faster with the help on this specific financing activity of our CGI subsidiary. So very different stories. But in the end, again, as you said, we have the flexibility to adapt to what we believe together, the business from SG and the startup, the founders, what we believe is the best way to collaborate.
Well, quite some successful stories for sure. What I wanted to ask you, Didier, is connected with what I asked also before to Ruth. So this is quite a difficult period for startups to raise fund, and the future is quite uncertain. So I would really like to hear your opinion, and maybe we can actually give some suggestions to our listeners how to approach a corporate venture fund. So what's the ideal profile you can think of a startup that could really be interesting for you at Société Générale? And maybe also some verticals you are actually focusing on right now.
Yeah. So having discussed with a number of peers, I think we're pretty much all in the same situation, which is we had a deal flow and we had investments that were, you know, being looked at, considered. And the crisis, of course, slowed a little bit things. But on our side, you know, we had a file that was pretty mature, and it's going to go. We probably will close it in a couple of weeks. So what was already, you know, identified, I think, is something, even though, you know, it got a little bit slower, is something that you know, has very little reason, at least in the banking industry. Of course, there could be differences in other verticals, not to go further. The difficulty, of course, is that the deal flow and the pipeline has been much more difficult to fill. So probably there will be less investments in the months to come because of, you know, the difficulty not to be able to meet the people, which is, you know, always very important when you want to invest. You really want to know the people, the founders, the teams in which you're going to invest. In terms of what are the impacts, it's probably a little bit early. You know, I would say everyone had to experience new ways of working and new ways of interacting with providers, suppliers, and of course, digitalization is a big topic. So as most incumbent banks, we were, you know, not fully ready, even though we had a number of processes that were already end-to-end online and that, you know, served very well. But of course, it pointed out areas where we need to probably speed up a bit digitalization of end-to-end processes. So that's, you know, of course, for our external clients. Not to forget our own people, Société Générale employees. There are also processes that we had to perform remotely, most of us being working from home. So there again, there are also some, you know, very good startups that have been developing tools and ways to foster, you know, productivity of people who are working remotely. So that's also a big interest. And then we need to, you know, probably have a little bit more time to really better understand what the economic crisis, how long it's going to last, and how it will impact the different verticals, industries, travel, and so on, because all those corporates are our clients. And when we look at, you know, what exactly are going to be the needs of those clients, it also depends on the way their own business are going to be impacted. So probably a little bit early to say, apart from our digitalization of processes and internal ways of working, but what are the areas where we will focus?
Didier, I wanted to go back a little bit on a structure question, because, you know, after a number of exchanges that I'm pretty sure you know, some of it we have done together with other like a corporate venture capital. I'm thinking of, you know, Commerzbank and, you know, the, your colleagues from BBVA and Santander, et cetera, et cetera. You know, there is, I want us to discuss a little bit of, you know, what's your view on a trend that seems to be a common one, you know, amongst all these corporate venture capital that started as a more integrated and internal arm. And then, you know, some of them, they actually evolved in something which is, of course, always fully strategically aligned, you know, with the problems that the banks need to solve. But at the same time, they reach some sort of like a further independence, maybe because, you know, there is a matter of agility, a matter of, you know, instead of having a floating available capital, it is more handled like a true VC, or maybe even to attract the right type of talent, right? Which is sometimes could be a challenge as well. And what's your own view on this? First of all, do you have you seen, like, would you agree with this sort of trend? I mean, have you seen this too? And what do you think might be the evolution, if you see some of it, in this corporate venture capital world?
You're right. When, you know, when we look back at probably the last 5 years, we've seen evolution of corporate venture teams that, you know, moved from pure strategic, fully internalized, and you know, mostly investing out of the balance sheet with no specific investment structure, moving into things that are, you know, to in some banks really look like a VC, not a corporate VC, even though it still, as you said, has this strategic insight and strategic value to bring. I think it's, you know, it's a balance, and probably it's, you know, different from one company, one bank, or one financial institution to the other, depending also on the culture. We all have heard that, you know, in some institutions, the decision to invest, you know, requires to have pretty much the top 5 or top 10 people from the bank to re-meet and to decide. And of course, that can be very, very cumbersome. At Société Générale, it's absolutely not the case. We have, you know, a different organization where we don't need to have this, you know, formal committee in order to make a decision. Of course, we have our internal processes and decision-making processes, but it's, you know, quite easy. I would say that I've never seen that as a real impediment, even though I've heard some of my colleagues talking about, you know, very bluntly. On the other side, we all must recognize that sometimes we see startups where we can figure that, you know, yes, there should be synergies. And sometimes the businesses are either not ready, not mature enough, because out of our 16 business units, of course, some have been, you know, using investment and practicing that with startups for many years. Others have never, you know, had the opportunity or to do it. So we also must recognize that sometimes we could miss, if we have to have a formal validation by a business in order to make an investment, we can miss opportunities. So it's a balance. What we're trying to do is really, you know, find the sweet spot where on our side we can, you know, push for investments, even though the business or the businesses with which we believe the startup will in the end develop those synergies might not be fully ready. Of course, if they don't believe at all in it, there's no file. But we really need to find that balance so we can push. And of course, most of the case still remains, cases where we have already synergies and we try to leverage on them. And for, you know, the talents, I think it's also a question of where we stand in the cycle. I mean, in the past 5, you know, at least 5 years, all valuations have, you know, gone up. The cycle was pretty positive. So, you know, in those cycles, the financial part looks, you know, pretty good. And so people tend to say, yes, you know, of course, it's not my first driver, but it looks pretty good. So why not, you know, emphasize a bit on it? We're going to have to see in the years to come. Hopefully the recession will not be too hard. But if we have a slowdown in the cycle, and if we start to see valuations that are not, you know, increasing as they used to do, maybe a few people who, you know, were putting more emphasis on the financial side and the strategic will reconsider it. We'll have to see.
Yeah, definitely. Consider also the drop in valuation that we have seen recently, that your last point was quite interesting. But to close up this episode, let's assume I'm a startup. How do I reach out to Société Générale? And how can I know if I have the chance to be able to be one of the startups you are betting on?
Really, there are multiple ways, of course. When I look at the deal flow, probably half of the startups we engage discussions with at our level, half of them are, you know, pushed by our business lines. So those are startups where, for any reason, they had the opportunity to discuss with our business guys on the field. And then, you know, it's those business units that send us and say, we have, you know, had discussions, sometimes already a commercial agreement. Can you look at it from an investment perspective, what you think about it? And half of, you know, the second half really comes from our interactions with, you know, partners in the ecosystem. Antimus, you know, we're one investor and we have invested in a limited number of VC funds in order to develop good relations and, you know, share deal flow and that kind of alignment. So, you know, either you can directly come to us, Société Générale Venture, and it could be through, you know, any partner that we have, or directly we have a website where, you know, people and startups can directly write to us, Société Générale Innovation, or really, you know, go through a more focused discussion with a business where you think you have the ability to create value. And those business, if they see the value of this partnership, they will definitely refer the startup to us.
Didier, thank you very much. Actually, I think the discussion today was really complete, with two different, very complementary, and both very compelling views on how to manage, investments from a large corporate side. You know, in one case, more towards, you know, the insurtech world, and now with Didier into the banking world. Didier, thank you very much. I love this first chat with us in Breaking Banks Europe. Like, very, very warm welcome again, and thank you so much for your intervention, Didier.
Thanks to you both.
Francesca, thank you very much for being my great co-host today. Guys, again, stay with us. That was Breaking Banks Europe. Where does the money go? Stay tuned. And it's a wrap.
Thanks for listening to Breaking Banks Europe, a Provoke Media podcast in cooperation with FinTech Stage. Don't forget to tweet us out, shout out, or post to the team at Breaking Banks EU on Twitter. If there's something or someone you'd like to hear on our cast, let us know. See you next week on Breaking Banks Europe.